Hello, I'm Daniel Freeman, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast.
And I'm Kevin Hatchard. Here's what's coming up on this week's edition.
With 8 games to go in the Premier League, we look ahead to this weekend's key fixtures. Just 3 points separate the two Manchester clubs at the top, and Wolves face Bolton in a massive game at the bottom.
And after passing his practical exam, the RFU have named Stuart Lancaster as the full-time England head coach. We hear from the man himself. We'll also pick the bones out of the latest test defeat for England's cricketers.
Well, plenty to catch up on this weekend, Kevin, ahead of the weekend. And we'll start with the Premier League and the title race. 3 points separating the two Manchester clubs at the top. We'll start by previewing Manchester City against Sunderland, and maybe a bit of revenge for City in this one after their 1-0 defeat at Sunderland on New Year's Day.
Yeah, I think City obviously are under real pressure now. They have an impeccable home record in the Premier League. They've won all of their home games. But this could be quite a tricky one, actually. Sunderland have just started to have a bit of a dip for the first time under Martin O'Neill. They went out of the FA Cup in midweek, so they'll be keen to bounce back and try and push for, you know, a top eight finish. I think City will win, but I think it will be a really tricky one. I think the big boost for City is it looks as though Vincent Kompany will be back from injury. He's missed the last 4 games, and they have missed him, no question.
Yeah, big boost for my fantasy football team as well. He's been sorely missed from that. But you're right, him and Julian Lescott had the makings, although deep there, that they're a very good central defensive pairing, a right and left foot combination. And Lescott's in the form of his life, really was, until Kompany got injured.
And I think the problem is as well, you look at some of the replacements, Colo Touré's in and out, and Savage isn't up to it. No. So that is a problem I think City are going to have to address in the summer, because I think Stefan Savage hasn't worked out as they thought he might. Maybe, having had a season of, you know, Premier League exposure, maybe next season he will improve, but it's a bit of a gamble. And I think with Colo Touré probably going in the summer, they're definitely going to have to look at getting another centre-back in, I think.
Well, that game in mind then, Manchester United are at Blackburn on Monday, another Monday fixture for Manchester United. But you're going to presume that Blackburn are going to put up a tougher fight than Fulham did. Just, you know, Fulham played okay at Old Trafford, but you could sense, you know, generally that they were already on their summer holidays.
Yeah, although the Fulham would argue that they should have had a penalty and therefore would have had a great chance of coming away with a 1-1 draw. But yeah, they were overrun in the first half. I think this is an interesting game because Blackburn, obviously, having got that crucial home win recently, and everybody thought, well, maybe that's them. You know, they were 6 points clear of the drop zone, I think. Maybe that's them out of it. They then lost at Bolton, and, you know, some of the teams nearer the bottom have started to pick up points. Teams like Wigan,
QPR beat Liverpool.
Liverpool's doing a tour of relegation-threatened clubs, just gifting them 3 points like confetti. And so, you know, Blackburn suddenly, having had that boost and thought they might have been out of it, suddenly the cold hand of relegation's back on the shoulder. So it's a big game for them. United generally have a tough game at Ewood Park, but I would think United would have too much for them.
It's interesting you should say that, because we'll come on to Bolton in a second. But for Blackburn, the whole game seemed to almost pass them by in a way, that the game at Bolton, because it was so, you know, everyone was so transfixed on Fabrice Mwamba and the whole spectacle of that, and, you know, the fantastic you know, tribute that they paid before the game there. But everyone seemed to forget that this is a massive 6-pointer until it actually happened. And then you see what it did for Bolton and their league position. It hasn't really affected Blackburn that much. They're 5 points above the drop zone now instead of 6. But, you know, it could have repercussions come the end of the season.
Yeah, I think so. Because I think if Blackburn had come away with the win, then obviously I think they could legitimately say that they were probably clear of trouble. But this has dragged them back in a little bit. And yeah, you're right. You know, the focus was always going to be on Fabrice Mwamba, what happened to him, and the fact that he is making a recovery. It was always going to be an emotional game for the Bolton players, and they were always going to have that extra bit of motivation to do well. And they did outplay Blackburn. It's a tricky one for Blackburn, because obviously they do have quality players there. And they do have players that feel they probably should be a lot further clear of the relegation zone than they are. But we are getting towards, you know, the business end of the season. And if going into the final 3-4 matches, Blackburn are only, say, 2-3 points above the drop zone, then it is going to be a very nervy time for them.
Wolves against Bolton, a massive six-pointer. Both teams in trouble in the relegation zone. And Wolves looking for their first win under Terry Connor. Just the 1 point picked up so far. Here are the thoughts of SkyBet.com's Dale Tempest.
They've won one in the last 16 games and managed 1 point from the last 24 at home. I think that tells you all you need to know. Even before Terry Connor took over, things were looking bad for Wolves. You look at the stats. This, for me, one of the bets of the weekend. Bolton to win away at Wolves. Draw no bet, even money. I think that's a bit of value. You look at Bolton's recent record against Wolves as well. They've only lost one of the last 10 games against Wolves. That's a cracking record. And also important at this stage of the season, against the bottom five sides in a head-to-head, so the five sides fighting for relegation, Bolton have taken 16 points. Quite an incredible amount. They do seem to have a better quality than the sides around them. So I think Bolton 15-8 for the win. And I say that draw no better, even money. That'll be having a few of my pounds on it.
Well, Kevin, you've seen Wolves a number of times this season. Do you feel as if they could get the win that could provide a catalyst for the rest of the season?
No, not the way they're playing at the moment. I thought they were okay against Manchester United for the first 20 or so minutes, but they are giving away goals every single game. That's the problem. They are defensively so bad. And that's what's undermined them all season long. They have attacking threats. Matt Jarvis is a good player. Kevin Doyle has had a bad season, but he's still a good player. Stephen Fletcher's just a natural goal scorer. They have threats going forward, but at the back, they are a shambles. And it doesn't seem to matter what configuration of back four they come up with. They just can't cut out the basic errors. What was worrying, I thought, was that in the press conference after Wolves had been thrashed by Manchester United, the first goal was Johnny Evans' first ever goal for Manchester United. It was from a set piece. It was a corner to the far post. Michael Carrick totally unmarked on the far post, played it back across goal, and Evans scored from 6 yards out. We asked Terry Connor after the game, "You must have been disappointed with conceding such a basic goal." And he said, "Yes, we worked on that all week." That's a worry for me. If they focused on not giving away goals from set pieces, that's exactly what they didn't want to do against Manchester United, and it was the first thing they did.
It's also QPR against Arsenal, and out of all the teams at the bottom, QPR seems to have the toughest running. They're playing every one of the top five teams in that running, and they come up against an Arsenal team that are absolutely flying at the moment. And a man in Robin van Persie who seems to do no wrong, and you know, I don't think this is too silly a thing to say, is the sole reason why Arsenal are third in the Premier League this season.
Yeah, he is. He's the reason why they were managed to drag themselves out of a desperately bad run of form. They were kind of lower mid-table, weren't they, at one stage, and he went on an incredible goal-scoring run. Now that kind of good form has rubbed off on some of the other players. There's the belief back there, and they feel they can beat anyone. And this is a really tricky game for QPR, who, barring that freak game against Liverpool, have been on a desperately bad run of form. And it is difficult when you're down the bottom and you don't have momentum. And what was unfortunate for them is that, having got a bit of momentum with that Liverpool win, they then went to Sunderland and suffered, you know, a 3-1 defeat and didn't really look like getting anything out of it. So this is a tricky one for QPR, because if they come through this really bad run of fixtures with, say, 2-3 points, then they really are going to be in trouble.
Well, let's move on to rugby now, and England have named Stuart Lancaster the full-time boss after he won 4 out of 5 matches as interim coach in the Six Nations. The RFU.com's Simon Ward spoke into the New England boss after the announcement.
Ian Ritchie said the interview process started in December. Does it feel like a four-month audition?
Yes, it did. You know, I mean, ultimately, I mean, it was never really about me. I never felt it, to be honest. It was all about me trying to get the team to a place where I felt that, you know, it reflected the values and the pride we should have for playing for our country. And I think that was a priority for me. Obviously, through the course of that, then obviously the application process came in and the interview process, and the sort of two ended up running alongside each other by the end. And, you know, the final interview was after the Ireland game. But I think overall, I had nearly 9 hours of interviews alongside the Six Nations, so it was pretty thorough.
So when you finally heard, did you do your version of the Ash Splash? Not in saying that you did that exactly, but I mean, how did you celebrate?
I haven't actually yet, to be honest. I mean, Ian Ritchie told me in his office, and obviously I gave a reserved thank you and bowed my head gracefully. And
backed out.
Yeah, exactly. And walked out the room, went, get in, and I picked up a bag, walked to the station, got on the tube, got a train to King's Cross. I got Vauxhall to King's Cross, and then on the train on the way home, no one had a clue who I was, and ate a bag of crisps.
And that was it?
That was it, really. No, I'm going on holiday next week, so I'll have a quiet beer then.
The abiding memory of you after that Ireland game was walking around Twickenham, taking in what you'd achieved, taking in the crowd reaction, the fact that you're very obviously the people's choice. Does that add an extra feel-good to this?
That was an unbelievably special occasion, but I don't think it was about, you know, the crowd weren't just applauding me, they were applauding the team, they were applauding the players, and it was actually what was the best thing about that moment was sharing it with them, you know, and that's as a coach what you live for, where you share those moments together. You know, we had a great sing-song on the bus on the way to the hotel after the black tie dinner, and they're the moments really that you remember. You know, for me personally, it's great that people have connected with the team. Great that people can see there's a pride in the team, and that they can see that the direction is a direction they want to willingly follow. And, you know, people have a choice whether to support the team or not, and people have chosen to get behind the team, and that's ultimately makes me very proud.
And that is real proof of what you tried to instil from that first meeting at West Park Rugby Club in Leeds. That was the core of what you were trying to say, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I think it's the foundation of teams, to be honest. I think it's the foundation of, you know, how you build a team is that you get everyone pulling together in the same direction behind a common cause and a reason why. And when you play for your country, sometimes you just need to remind the players once or twice about who you're representing. It was very easy to do beyond then because the players then bought into it very quickly, and we accelerated it, and you could see the level of commitment rise on a weekly basis. So at the end, you know, going into the Ireland game, we knew they were going to present a formidable challenge, but equally I had a deep inner confidence the night before the game that it's going to have to take a very good Ireland side to beat us.
A backbone of your Six Nations campaign was your consistency in selection. How important now is it for you that you can keep consistency on and off the pitch to develop those ideas that you've put in place?
Yeah, I think it is. I think we made the decisions around that time based on a plan. You know, the plan was about building a team for long term for the future of England. And I don't see no reason, nothing's convinced me to change the plan in any way, shape or form. I think there'll be tweaks along the way, players will come and go, but equally the direction that we're going is the one we want to continue post Six Nations, absolutely.
By and large, people seem very happy for Stuart Lancaster that having got through the Six Nations and turned a bit of a corner with the England team, that he has got the job on a full-time basis. But I've got one question for you, Kev, about this. And the fact that there's a tough summer tour of South Africa coming up. Would the RFU have been better placed to say, well, we'll see how you come through this and then we'll make a decision going forward after that?
I can see the logic behind that. I mean, it's a popular choice by the RFU, but it's a very bold one as well. You know, he does have plenty of coaching experience within the RFU. Of course, he was Saxon's boss before he took this role. But, you know, this has been a baptism of fire. He's done well in the Six Nations. They've won 4 out of 5. There are critics like Stuart Barnes, the former England fly half, who say he's not been tested at the highest level. But I think if you make him then go to South Africa and go on a tour there, you know, you're showing that you don't have total confidence in him. I think that's the thing. I think you're basically saying to him, well, you've done quite well, but we're still not sure about you. And I think that uncertainty would not play well in the dressing room, and it wouldn't help Lancaster. I think now he knows what the job is. He'll be able to put together his backroom team. Graham Rantry, I think, who's been the forwards coach, I think he'll try and tie him down to a deal.
Andy Farrell.
And they want to get Andy Farrell from Saracens. He has been sharing the job between Saracens and his work with England. But I think Farrell will have to make a decision one way or the other, whether he wants to be with Saracens full-time or England full-time. So, he gets a run at it. He gets to start planning for the 2015 World Cup, which is what we're really looking at. You know, England want to perform well on home soil, and they feel Lancaster's the man to get them to do that. I think what's been noticeable is that he has, it's a cliche, but he's managed to put a smile back on the face of English rugby, which is what he said he wanted to do in the first place. Some good young players have come through, the likes of Owen Farrell, and it seems a very tight-knit group, and Lancaster has to take a huge amount of credit for that.
Okay, and last of all this week, and I'd love to spend all day talking about this, but we won't really have the time. England's cricketers, disastrous 2012 continuing with defeat to Sri Lanka. Four test defeats on the bounce, and if you're honest, they should have won all four of those matches. They had chances to win all four of those games. I'm going to put one question to you because it's something that I think is quite a very popular, not belief as such, but very debatable at the moment, is Monty Panesar's inclusion in the team. Yes, he's there on merit for being a fantastic spin bowler, but as far as I'm concerned, you cannot have him out in the field because the ball will just follow him as it did in that test.
I think it's been the argument that's raged pretty much his whole England career. He spent a long, long time out of the side because his outfielding isn't good enough and his batting isn't good enough either.
You could argue that we lost the test because of those two drop catches, because of the amount of runs that they put on in the end of that first
innings. You could, but I mean, you know, let's look at the picture in general. Yes, that cost England dear. So did Stuart Broad's no ball when they thought they got the final wicket. So did England's miserable batting in the first innings. I think if we were to focus on Monty and his shortcomings in the field, I think we're actually distracting ourselves from what is the main issue here. And it has been England's lack of discipline in the batting lineup. The bowling unit, I think, all winter has been excellent. I think they've generally performed very well. Panesar's been a big part of that. He's taken wickets. He looks as good a spinner as he's been for a long, long time. And I think he's outperformed Swan in a lot of the innings. I think the main issue is those top six that have performed so well in getting England to the number one ranking just haven't had the patience and the discipline to deal with spin bowling. And, you know, that is something they have to seriously look at. Owen Morgan lost his place, and now it's going to come down to whether some of those other batsmen will be under pressure as well. This is not a new thing, England struggling on the subcontinent on, you know, slow, low pitches against, you know, spinners. This is not a new thing. What's disappointing is that England have approached pitches which haven't actually had that many demons in them, and they've made it look as though there are because they've played injudicious shots and they just haven't had the discipline to dig in like Jonathan Trott did for his century. You know, more batsmen needed to follow his example, I think.
Okay, Kev, well, thanks for your time this week. Enjoy your game, Aston Villa against Chelsea. Big weekend coming up in the Premier League. Matches at the top involving Manchester City and Manchester United. The big game at the bottom, Wolves against Bolton. We've heard from the new England full-time head coach in rugby, Stuart Lancaster, and we've taken a look at England's cricketers' defeat to Sri Lanka. Enjoy your sporting weekend.